new studio, new hot and clammy studio. Rock here. Brought the fluffers, bring in the fluffers. Okay, this is 96.3 FM. You are going to be having a special show today in our new studio. We have cool interviews, plus our live guest. Do we introduce you by name? Let's have our guest introduce himself.
Hi, Brayton Tompkins, former
Sentinel hack, has joined the show and repudiated his dark past. More on that.
How you doing?
The radio is on, the mic is on, your radio is on, and I hope that Brayton's mic is on, too. Brayton, are you there?
Testing. 1, 2, 3.
Well, it sounds like your needle is moving. Well, this has been many a moon getting us together here, Brayton. I've been hoping to give you a canned interview just to make sure that you didn't reveal any Sentinel secrets and get, of course, the Hit Squad treatment.
Oh, but that's half the fun.
I was afraid, you know, that Honig's hoodlums might come after you. Tom Honig, of course, the infamous Sentinel editor. Actually, we call it the Scent Anal here at the Bathrob Spears Broadsides. For those of you who are new to the show, Bathrob Spears Broadsides is a civil rights on the streets show, which actually covers a lot of topics, or a few, depending on your perspective. We cover the sleeping ban, we cover the drug war, we cover protests involving, well, local protesters who are concerned about national issues, like the war on the people of Yugoslavia, like the new ethnic cleansing campaign in Yugoslavia, which is now taking place against the Serbians. And we have a little interview on that one we're going to be playing later. We are concerned about free radio and how it's doing around the country, although that really is a topic much better covered by Vinny the V-Man, who was good enough to set me up as engineer here for this show. Thank you, Vinny. And particularly interested in local politics, because so much said about national politics in other areas and so little about what's happening, really happening here in Santa Cruz, that I like to get into that when I can. So homeless issues are also my beat, because I've been concerned about civil rights on the streets for 3 or 4 decades, and I'm on the streets myself right now, so why shouldn't I be concerned about them? I was evicted 3 or 4 days ago, and here I am. I'm taking over this studio, in case anybody wants to know. I'm sleeping here. I'm eating here. I intend to barricade anybody. Well, actually, I'm kidding. I'm looking for a place, but that's another story. But, Brayton, the reason that I originally approached you, I guess we kind of met on the streets three, 4 years ago around issues. I was interested in, I guess, the sleeping ban at that time and the downtown ordinances, and I was very skeptical about the Sentinel. You were kind of a fledgling writer there. And how much time did you actually spend at the Sentinel before you left?
I would say from the summer of 1995 till the fall of 1997, a couple years.
Uh-huh. And were you, what was your position there? Like, how much copy did you actually get into the Sentinel?
I was kind of a jack of all trades. I did a lot of features writing, got quite a few stories for the Spotlight and for the Breaking Away section in there. I did weekend news reports for the hard news section, a lot of crime stuff, which really educated me about the system.
The system at the Sentinel and all those criminals with their suppression of real news, you mean?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I also learned a lot about that suppression that happens right there in the newsroom, not just regarding how they report on criminals. But in any event, I also did some clerking duties.
Clerking duties. Well, let's go back to that. I think, of course, suppression is the main interest I'm interested in. Of course, you've got a number of topics that you've kind of outlined, which perhaps we can touch on. But suppression of the news. What were the major news stories that happened during your tenure at the Sentinel that you feel did not get covered and that should have, or that got covered in a bad way?
Probably the most alarming for me, or at least the one that sits heaviest in my memory, would have been actually in reference to the sleeping ban. Back when protesters filled the city hall and shut things down and did a lockdown.
Oh, right, you're talking about 1996. That actually, there was a protest going on in front of city hall since March of 96, when the winter shelter program closed, and leaving only, I don't know, 20-odd, 30-odd spaces for over 1,000 homeless people, and a law in place that made it illegal to sleep outside or cover up with bedding. And then a protest led by Dan Hopkins and Sean Alini for, 6 months?
Quite a while.
Culminating in some strong militant action at city council, where I guess 6-7 people locked themselves down to the furniture and were arrested and tried, and actually the jury hung on their case, and they never served any time, and they were never convicted, as they shouldn't have been. It was a dramatic but non-violent protest.
Exactly.
But you say the Sentinel did not cover it. Well, I seem to remember John Woolfolk doing a thorough trashing. Of course, he's in the Mercury News.
Well, of course.
And Karen Clark must have had something to say about
that. Well, there's
that.
Coverage, and then there's coverage. As a matter of fact, Karen Clark, for those of you who don't know, who had the City Hall meetings as her beat, was there and did report. Yeah, sure, she reported. However, she only talked to the police and only talked to the city council members, and she never made any attempt to approach the protesters, who I think would be a very interesting source for the population to hear about concerning an event, well, where they lock themselves down. I knew this, so I was there, and I'd been tipped off that something was going to happen. And I covered just the protesters, knowing quite well that Karen Clark would certainly get the other side.
Mm-hmm. And you actually wrote a story about that?
Yes, I went back to the newsroom after things settled down, after the smoke cleared, so to speak, and I composed what facts I had gotten into just a brief sort of outline, and was hoping, even though I knew better, that Karen Clark and I would come back and maybe meld the two sides together and have some actual objective, yeah. Mm. Well, I had illusions in those days. They have since been shattered.
Mm.
And in any event, though, to make a long story short, we ended up going toe-to-toe in a screaming match in the middle of the newsroom.
Well, give us a blow-by-blow of this conflict, you versus Clark. A round one, what happened?
Well, round one, her eyes were shooting flames when she saw me at the City Hall meeting in the first place. Because
you were interfering in her beat.
Right, exactly. And I knew there was going to be a showdown going.
I knew there was going to be trouble.
I could hear the bells tolling. And so when I went back to the newsroom, she came into the newsroom storming and came straight to me. And I don't remember her exact words, but I remember something to the effect of,
"Fuck you, you little punk."
Some, yes. Mm-hmm. That pretty well describes it concisely in so many words.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over to her, and I just tried to tell her, well, look, I wanted to make sure that all sides were covered.
Unlike your usual Rotkin-loving coverage. He was, of course, mayor at the time. We called him Riot Act Rotkin because he attempted to make one act of sleeping at City Hall a crime punishable by up to 6 months in jail. He wanted to close City Hall grounds completely at night in order to crush the protest. That one didn't fly too well past the city council, and it didn't fly past the judges, but he was able to make things much more uncomfortable and difficult for protesters. Signs that attacked him personally earned his special animus. He actually had one hauled away himself, which was criticizing him, showing, of course, that his sensitivity to free speech does have its limits.
Oh, quite so. As does Karen Clark's.
Oh, boy.
Certainly, and those limits are...
Karen Clark's invective seemed to have few limits. She was big on the poo-poo angle of the City Hall sleepers
right.
protest in 1996.
She was also big on referring to people who were just hanging out on down on what used to be Hippie Corner and is now a nice little capitalist building, I believe, in the works. She was used to refer to them in her own voice as a reporter as hooligans and ragamuffins.
Hooligans and ragamuffins. I think that's really quite colorful language. Clark no doubt got a plaudits from Honig and, who knows, McPherson when
as
he was
well
running
as
the paper.
Supervising editor at the time. They were laughing up a storm and
had
making
a great time with that.
Derogatory jokes. Yeah, that kind of flavor kind
well,
of permeated
this
the newsroom.
This attempt to smear homeless people as poo-poo heads or poo-poo asses or just protesters as just being people who like to piss and shit and create a mess at City Hall just for the hell of it. You know, issues like the right to sleep at night, the right to live without harassment, the right to maintain one's first-class citizenship in a society where homeless people have become kind of a forbidden group in a certain sense. I mean, the authorities won't tell you this, of course, because it's unconstitutional to do that, but in fact, a lot of the ordinances that are now making the rounds at city councils, such as the curfew laws in the parks, the curfew laws along the river levee, are designed to harass the homeless. And to typify or to characterize the homeless as hooligans sort of reminds me of Der Stürmer kind of journalism, so beloved of our old friends, the National Socialist Democratic Workers' Party, NSDAP, or the Nazis, as they called themselves in Germany in the 30s, who, you know, really wanted to characterize the Jews in a certain way, and so they did. And this, of course, is how a lot of newspapers, a lot of mainstream papers characterize homeless people, and it certainly, I think, does aptly describe Karen Clark, who, with one exception that I remember, was almost uniformly hostile to and prejudicial against and smeared homeless protests, often giving misinformation as well. The one exception was, I think, three of us went into her office and went through her story, showing her her factual errors. And she then said, well, write an editorial and send it in. And Becky Johnson sent in an editorial. She was then on the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which actually talked about what was really going on in City Hall, and it was printed, pretty much. I think there may have been a change or two. Usually the editor does something to kind of cripple or, you know, cut out the life to well, show that he or she has control over what's going
actually,
on.
Actually, it starts right in the title that they give the editorial. They think very carefully about that.
Right. I know that when Johnson wrote another editorial the year before, or maybe it was the year after, I'm not sure. Anyway, it was when the Real Change, Not Spare Change hoax was making the rounds. That's the program beloved of Linda Steinow and Don Lane, who now is the staff person, get this, the $7,500 staff person for the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Yeah, I used to sit on the board of directors for the Homeless Community Resource Center with her, and I could not believe.
Linda Steiner.
Linda Steiner.
And Lane was also on that board. Don Lane was also in the Homeless Resources Center. He was sort of the yes man for Karen Gillette when she was running the show out there. And now he's getting a highly paid position to essentially, I guess, lead this group of bewildered activists around. This is the Crone Homeless Issues Task Force, which has now got a full component of people, and they're supposed to do something. And in fact, what they'll be doing is, I suspect, not doing the kind of activism they need to be doing, and all under Don Lane's leadership. I know what Lane apparently, I can't stop babbling about him. But let's get back to the Sentinel. And I asked you what. Well, I guess getting back to the original question, you originally, I asked you what you had done at the Sentinel. What issues had been most censored or distorted or ignored by the Sentinel in your tenure there that you noticed? And maybe give us some notion of the internal workings of how this happened and colorful little anecdotes, maybe some dirty jokes and throw in some stuff.
I don't know too many dirty jokes, but I do. It really basically, it all starts with a reporter. It either happens one or two ways. A reporter comes to an editor with some information they've gotten, and the editor says it's not newsworthy. And I'll give you a good example of that. A few years back, or not even a few years back, there was a lot of protesting going on with the Big Mountain issue here in Santa Cruz.
And Big Mountain, for those who don't know, is the fight for the Diné people to retain their rights against a kind of a combination of Peabody Oil and our coal companies and other Indian Native American groups being used kind of as ringers to dispossess Navajos of their land, and that was a really burning issue for a lot of people. Although it was an important issue, I was always more concerned about local homeless people, and I keep wondering why. And of course, a lot of the people involved in Big Mountain were also concerned about local homeless people. But you were saying that the Sentinel somehow didn't give these issues the fair coverage that they could have?
No, the editor would flat out, in any event, one time there was a protest down at the clock tower in which they were stopping traffic, you know, doing usual things of protest. And it was quite a concern. It caused quite a stir. And the editor's response to the reporter saying, well, you know, this is going on, I believe it was Donna Kimura, was, oh, people don't care about that.
Who was the editor?
The editor was John McNicholas. Yes, it was. Often night supervising editor.
Is he still on the Sentinel? Or?
I believe so. I'm sure he'll be there for quite a while. They call him Johnny Mac there.
Johnny Mac.
Yeah.
Boy, these guys, you know, they get into these entrenched positions, and they're sort of like, you know, old turds on the toilet. You cannot dislodge them.
You cannot dislodge them really, because their hands extend out into the community, right into the pocketbooks of major businesses. The Seaside Company, I could list off so many.
Well, let's talk about the Seaside Company. How has the Sentinel treated the Seaside Company? I know that I was sort of impressed during the last election with the kind of fluffy treatment they gave to the beach boardwalk boondoggle, as I called it, or the Canfield Company sellout, the Seaside Company sellout, where the Seaside Company was attempting to expand, get the cities to spend millions of dollars, realign streets, dispossess and evict Hispanic residents, and create a traffic nightmare for all of you middle-class folks out there. All to help old Charlie Canfield, you know, build up the boardwalk and supposedly to help the business of the town. What did the Sentinel have to say about that?
Well, the Sentinel didn't really have much to say about the issues of people being dispossessed or anything. I wasn't actually there at the time, but of course, well, it's my local newspaper, unfortunately. But they did certainly report how it would be good for business. They did certainly report how the city council leaders and other established members of the business community thought it would be a great idea to build the economy of Santa Cruz.
However, at the
same time, the fact is that hundreds and hundreds of people economically disadvantaged, mainly Hispanic people, will have no place to live. And the thing is that the city of Santa Cruz, and that includes the Santa Cruz County Sentinel, because they are much part of the operation as anything else, does not want those undesirables there because it's bad for business. And that's the kind of treachery and the plot that
now
the
you
Sentinel
say this,
is involved
but
in.
Did you see any specific indication of this? I mean, I seem to notice this in terms of their endorsements for the city council last fall, which were the right wingers, Lint Steinau and
well, you can
Cordero.
Go see it. You can see evidence of
but
this.
What did you see when you were on the Sentinel? What indications did you see of this?
Well, it's not just indications of what's happening at the Sentinel. I mean, in order to understand and really see it, you have to see it as it's happening all over this country with the media. But you just look at the amount of advertising in a newspaper, and you think about how each one of those ads represents the main source of money. Not each one, but all those ads represent the main source of monetary resources that the Sentinel has.
So who are the big advertisers for the Sentinel?
Seaside Company, a lot of retail stores. I can't really think of specifics because just look at the newspaper and you'll see the big advertisers.
I kind of blank out when I see ads, so I don't really have any realistic sense of who the advertisers are in the Sentinel. But again, let's get back to the dirt and the grime and the grease and the grit and all that stuff. I mean, when you were on the Sentinel, in a way, the Sentinel has gotten, to me, it's sort of the good guy in this most recent attempt by Judge Acow to suppress the press's attempt to expose CPS's bullshit, the Child Protective Services, misinformation that resulted in a child being taken away from his parent. I'm not quite sure I'm getting this exactly right, but and then the judge didn't like this information getting out to the public, so she slaps a contempt order on the Sentinel.
That's really funny, too.
Which, of course, is interesting because the Sentinel usually obliges by censoring itself. They don't need to have the judges come in. They do the judge's job for them. This time, apparently, they didn't, and Judge Acow had a cow, so to speak.
Right.
So, but did you see a lot of this censorship while you were there at the Sentinel on other subjects?
Well, I saw quite a bit of censorships. It's really hard to think. I mean, I can remember one night where it was the night of the TWA crash during the Olympic Games up in New York City. And as you know, or many of you might know, it came out later the Navy might have been doing missile testing in that area, and that might have actually shot down the plane. However, on the night that it was actually shot down, there was a memo that circulated on the AP Press to every newspaper in the country, practically. AP Press, by the way, is a wire story that sends out stories to all the newspapers in the country, all the major mainstream newspapers in the country. The memo was from Navy Internal Services talking about how they had been doing missile testing in the area and how they thought they might have indirectly or directly, I believe are the exact words, caused this incident. And not only the Sentinel, but every newspaper in the country chose, for some strange reason, not to mention this in the articles that only came out later, that they had actually or might have had some involvement in this. That's the kind of censorship that goes on at the Sentinel. If you want to talk about other kinds of censorship, well, let's talk about the fact that people were stopped up in traffic. There was a major spectacle during that big mountain demonstration, and not one word really got printed on it at all.
Any other instances that you know of?
Any other instances? Really hard to... Well, then there's the fact, as I was beginning to explain, about Karen Clark. And had I not gone there... Had I not gone there and got the other side...
Gone to the city council on September 10th, 1996.
Right. I'm sorry. Had I not gone to the city council and been there, the only side that would have been reported was the police and the city council. I don't think I need to tell anybody. That would be an extremely slanted view. That's the kind of censorship. It's more about the filtering of information. It's not any specific issues. It's a constant thing that I myself, having not taken part of those kinds of things, wasn't even... aware of. I only saw it the next day when I began to talk to people of the movement who were telling me, well, they're reporting incorrectly. They're not saying anything about why we're doing this or the information, any information that might lead to the public deciding that maybe there is something to the movement, because, of course, they don't want that to happen.
Well, I know that locally issues of police abuse get very little coverage in the Sentinel. And
of course.
And I've had long conversations with Sentinel writer Daryl Cole on this issue. Cole covers the Citizens Police Review Board hearings, and he also is covering the sleeping ban. I guess it was called the Task Force to Examine the Camping Ordinance, the buyer's sellout group that she led to essentially raise expectations and fears, resulting in numerous assaults, some of them very serious, on homeless people, over 20 assaults on homeless people. All pretty much unsolved, though I guess one person is in custody and is going to be tried for one of those assaults. And yet, in spite of the these groups, these commissions Daryl Cole actually tried to do, he made a few minor kind of incremental advances on past reporting. He used the word sleeping ban rather than camping ban frequently.
He is as sold out as anybody else.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's not that I really, actually he wasn't there when I was there, but I've seen those kinds of tactics before. It's called Please the Public. You can see it in the editorials. Honig and Dave Regan, these are, I don't think Dave Regan's actually there anymore, who's the publisher, and other members of, higher up members of the Sentinel used to get together and talk about the editorials they would do and talk about how they would, and I've listened, I've heard these conversations, how they would tailor their editorial so that it presented one side and at the same time pleased the public so that nobody would get too angry. This happens in news stories too.
And you actually heard them talking about this?
Yes.
Do you remember any particular editorials where this was discussed? Or?
Well, there was a lot of discussion around the eviction of Free Radio Santa Cruz actually from Campbell Street.
Back in 1996?
Yeah.
Or was it 95?
I think it was actually 96. Okay. Pretty sure it was 96. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of discussion around
that. I remember the Sentinel reporter Karen Clark went into great delight in talking about these hooligan outlaws throwing bottles of urine and bags of shit. And
Honig's response in his editorial was, "Where's our outrage?" referring to it as a deluge of urine.
And in fact, of course, that didn't happen at all. What happened was that there were people kind of encamped on the rooftop. They had bottles of urine, which the police dropped from the second story onto the ground. And it was, I guess, Sergeant Crane, when he broke in, he got in, there was some...
A rookie cop.
He was actually a veteran cop.
No, the one who actually dropped, I forget his name.
Oh, right. No, actually, that was...
Was he the one who actually dropped it off?
Well, it wasn't Crane. No, Crane was the guy who came up the stairway of Campbell in order to...
Yeah.
We're actually also talking about an occasion where the city, instead of meeting the reasonable concerns of those who were entrenched in this household making a stand by paying them relocation fees, as they were later obliged to do by the court, or at least the owners were...
Mm-hmm.
By the way, caller, keep hanging on there. We're going to get to you in just a moment if you're calling in. Instead, they insisted on calling a huge police expedition in. Let's catch this phone line, if I can find the phone. There it is. And see what the phone person has to say, our incoming caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
It was Officer Lefebvre that threw the bottle of urine.
Officer Lefebvre? You mean the same officer who is currently the point of controversy in the May 22nd incident?
Yes.
The same officer who is accused of a bizarre pain compliance hold on a woman holding a child in the middle of the, or on the edge of the street?
Yes.
In an attempt to, well, some regard it as a form of torture. And the same officer who got, I should say, punched in the nose by Steve Argue and for that particular action. And
same officer to use pain compliance on me that day, too, as well.
Oh, you used pain compliance on you?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Oh, well, when I came down off the ladder and fell into the awaiting arms of Sergeant Crane.
You're talking about the incident that happened not on May 22nd of this year, but
Campbell Street.
Campbell Street 3 years
actually,
before.
Actually, the anniversary is coming up on the 19th here, August 19th, 1996.
And that was when you and a number of other people were evicted from Campbell Street in a completely unnecessary show of police force?
Yes, of course. Well, I don't know what the city cops are doing evicting people anyway. It's usually the sheriff's department.
But wait, that's not the way Karen Clark told it.
Of course!
Well, I think we really want to give Karen Clark an opportunity. Karen, if you're out there, please call at 427-3772, our Free Radio studio line, as soon as we get this ragamuffin off the line.
Well, the other point I wanted to bring up about Karen is about that, let's see, what was it, like 97 or so, Leonard Weinglass was speaking up on UCSC campus, and in an effort to create her own story, decided to call the wife of the slain officer, Daniel Faulkner.
Now let's get some background. We're talking about a man who is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Mumia Abu-Jamal, yes.
Mumia Abu-Jamal is a black man who is held in jail in Philadelphia, has been for almost 20 years, for allegedly shooting a police officer in a case that has aroused worldwide controversy, and Amnesty International considers him a prisoner of conscience.
Right. She, our ever-loving Karen Clark of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, called up Daniel Faulkner's ex-Daniel Faulkner's wife, Maureen Faulkner, and had her flown down. Now, probably the Sentinel paid for it. I wouldn't imagine why not. And actually brought her to this forum on Mumia Abu-Jamal and his case, up on campus. This was 96 or 90, I think it was 97. And actually, she created her own story. She was able to get this woman here and start a little controversy in that in the group, in the forum, which was mainly focused on the injustice of Mumia Abu-Jamal, and then she had to throw this little thing in there and create her own little story, which I thought was, you know, reporters aren't supposed to do that, right?
But they do it all the time. In fact, you're
objective.
You're told when you have a beat that you have to go find the stories, and when, and I quote so many editors there, when you cannot find the stories, make them.
Make them happen.
Well, that's what, you know, Hearst used to say. Hearst, William Randolph Hearst of the San Francisco Examiner. His correspondent from Spain in 1898 wired into the press room. There's no war here. You know what can I do? And he said.
Right.
Said you supply the story. I'll supply the war.
Right. Exactly. Well, I just thought I'd bring up that little thing that the Sentinel has done. Not to mention printing people's names that don't want their names printed because their name happened to be in some story. It had to be unrelated to the story that they're putting.
Well, I think we also, one of the main things about the Sentinel is more what it doesn't print. And I know you've done a lot of research, caller. I recognize your voice. You are, of course, Skidmark Bob, a radio broadcaster, cop watcher, proud father, and troublemaker extraordinaire.
And ragamuffin extraordinaire.
Certainly
hooligan, too. Hooligan, too.
Hooligan.
Indeed, a food not bomber at a time when they were arresting food not bombers or threatening to do so. And,
yes.
You know, just certainly, I guess you were part of the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty at one time.
Yes, I was.
That's the group that protested the sitting ordinance, which has now become such a accepted part of our heritage. I saw today as I walked down the mall some guy, Officer Malate, one of our local CSO...
454.
Police officers came up to him and said, "You can't sit near the Del Mar Theater." And so he got up and he moved. And I guess we can consider this in advance. He sat on one of those low planters where it's also illegal to sit. But apparently Officer Malate, not wishing to ask him to move again, let it slide.
Let it slide.
So we must see, there's a great liberal trend. You can, as long as you don't sit near the sacred shops, sort of the shrines of our modern-day Santa Cruz, it's okie dokie if you sit near the planters, or at least on this particular occasion it was.
Well, I have to go, but I wanted to let people know that that's one of the reasons why we started this radio station, Free Radio Santa Cruz, because time and time again, you know, demonstration or even in informational types things, we try to refer to the Sentinel, they'd come out. We were distorted time and time and time again, thinking, you know what, I could say that fucking story better. I could do this thing better. I could do it much better. You know, and so we did.
Well,
so we put a station on the air, and we're doing it right now.
Hold it, Bob. There's always the alternate media. The Metro usually gets it right, right?
Yeah,
or perhaps
that's
far right. Maybe that's a better way to say it.
Far right.
There's no mainstream newspaper in this country that will ever not distort the movement of people who are working towards the liberation.
And in a way, the Sentinel is not really mainstream at all. It's a Republican newspaper.
No. Wait a minute.
I had one more question. I got to go. Who is the Sentinel owned by? Bye.
The Sentinel is actually directly owned by Ottawa News Services, which owns various local newspapers, but Ottawa News Services is owned by Dow Chemicals. So what is a chemical company giving us our news? That's what I wonder.
I thought that the Wall Street Journal either owned or was one of the kind of the family of papers that the Sentinel was now owned by. We have an incoming call. Perhaps that caller will have something to enlighten us on that subject.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
No enlightenment here. I just want to know what that your guest was going to say about those private meetings with the Sentinel bigwigs about Free Radio Santa Cruz. That was what started off. And
private meetings?
Yeah, you kind of lost track a little bit there, didn't you?
Private meetings.
You know, the secret meetings or the editorial meetings and what they were talking about Free Radio
Santa
Cruz.
Well, we can't really say they were secret meetings. They were held in the newsroom, and that just goes to show you how the newsroom is slanted. It was several different conversations concerning what had happened there and how they wanted to present it, because they knew that free radio had become somewhat of a popular subject, a fad, a trend, even in some of the mainstream people, so they didn't want to offend them and offend the advertisers that they represented. So they were working out how to denounce free radio And, I mean, literally, I mean, we can't let them go on, and things like that, just totally slanted and totally putting that into the public's mind. But at the same time, you know, they were working on how they could throw in other things to kind of throw the public off.
Any other questions, caller?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I think the Sentinel just needs a truth squad all of its own. I mean, if free radio really should have a daily program correcting and augmenting.
You want to have free press. You want to have
what is not mentioned in the Sentinel, or what is inappropriately characterized. I mean, even such things as the times of city council meetings is frequently misstated in the Sentinel. It's just amazing. I mean, I'm a pretty regular city council person in terms of going to these silly meetings, and I know when I read it in the Sentinel that that's no indication whatsoever that's actually the truth. And often if there are meetings that are not mentioned in the Sentinel that are public meetings, like city council meetings, that just don't get there. It's just it's really kind of it's a tired joke, and it's a monopoly joke in our town.
More than tired, it's horrible.
They're
programming the people out there, so the people who are aware and are awake in this community that are trying to say, hey, look, why do we have people living on the streets? Let's do something about it. And all the different issues. Hey, why do we have Mumia Abu-Jamal in prison when it's obvious that he is not guilty? All these things that people are trying to bring to the public, the mainstream, and that refers to corporations and businesses right here in Santa Cruz, people like the Seaside Company, do not want that information coming out because, of course, people who are liberated and aware will not want to buy the Sentinel.
The phones are ringing off the hook. Let's
or go to the boardwalk. They'll have better things to do with their lives.
Yeah.
You're with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Can I get one question?
Mm-hmm.
What can a person do? I live with my disabled's going blind, literally, because she's a diabetic mother, and the Sentinel fucking truck delivers this newspaper every morning and wakes her up, and it really bothers her. What can be done about that? Man, we've talked to them. They don't give a shit.
That's an interesting point. I think a little protest in front of the Sentinel might be one approach. We'd actually, some of us who have been concerned with the Sentinel's failure to cover the issue of the Santa Cruz Five and the police attack on peaceful protesters at the May 22nd demonstration and subsequent police harassment of activists in that movement. And some of us came up with the idea of sort of setting up a table in front of the Sentinel and encouraging people to drop their subscription to the Sentinel and instead donate their money instead to the cause of the Santa Cruz Five or, I don't know, Free Radio Santa Cruz, some alternate journal. Or just put together a second newspaper. Obviously, the town needs another newspaper. They had one, The Independent. It's a weekly. They have this piece of trash, The Metro, which is kind of a corporate joke from over the hill. In answer to your question, what do you do? I guess you could go to the radio stations. I mean, the radio stations are sometimes relatively sympathetic because they're alternate media like KSCO, a not particularly notable radio station, but, you know, one which does have talk shows. And you could also, of course, call the Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can call KZSC.
Yes.
You know, you could sit downtown in a wheelchair with a sign, the Sentinel discriminates against the disabled. That would get them nervous.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a form of discrimination. If the Sentinel is ignoring your complaints, your mother is a disabled person, you've made that all, you know, very clear. You could also file a complaint with the district attorney's office that the Sentinel is violating some noise code. You want to document.
Well, there are no businesses that are allowed in this mobile home park, and that's a business.
Well, the other thing is you could take some C4 plastic explosives. Just kidding. No, I don't want to suggest that. I sometimes get whimsical. I'm a nonviolent kind of person myself, but I do believe in violent humor every so often.
Yeah.
Helps to get rid of some of the tension. I think there are numerous ways of embarrassing the Sentinel, ranging from, you know, a protest in front of their doors to a wheelchair downtown to going to the other media. What do you think, Brayden? We're talking, by the way, on the air with us, we have Brayden Tompkins. And do you want to take this on the air, or do you want to, because we can open up the phone lines, caller, or do you want to stay?
No, I was going to say, yeah, I don't have anything against the Metro. They've been helping Free Radio out a little bit, you know, as much as they can. I appreciate that big time, but the Sentinel, kiss my ass.
Okay, well, thank you, caller.
I'm sorry, what was your question?
No, I don't know. I think what we're going to do is take a brief musical break here in order to allow... you'd have a breather, maybe a maybe you can go read the Sentinel and check out the latest information. I know that there, I can't wait every morning to read what's happening in town, opening up the Sentinel. It's quite an experience. We're at 427-3772 for those of you who want to call in. Free Radio Santa Cruz, that's what you're listening to, 96.3 FM. With us in the studio is that former Sentinel writer, and I guess you're a Free Radio broadcaster as well, right?
I'm in the studio.
When is your show? You have a show? Or?
I'm working on it, definitely.
Watch out, Sentinel. This could be liberated Sentinel territory soon. If we
I'm not going to waste my time with the Sentinel. There's much bigger issues to talk about than that rag.
So give us a call if you want to join this ongoing discussion about the Sentinel and or about anything else that you think might be relevant around the topic. Again, civil rights on the streets is my interest. So stay with us. Cop from her album Failure to Disperse, which also contains the fine song Set Your Radio Free, as well as many other fine songs, some of which you'll be hearing on Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm your host, Robert Norris. Phone line to call in is 427-3772, and I'm kind of a little behind queuing up the tapes, but I guess what I'm going to do is play a little more of the, well, here's an incoming call. I hope that we have a new caller here. We'll see.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I have a music request.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
The band?
Oh, the band, as in B-A-N-N-E-D.
Yes, as in, like, the Citizens Band radio station of Santa Cruz, Free Radio.
Indeed. Well, the first, we have a number of songs here. The band actually is a band that I came across on the streets of Santa Cruz 2 days ago. So did you, I guess.
It's funny you should mention that because I met them on the internet and I invited them. I noticed that they were doing a tour of the West Coast about a month ago, this was. And I noticed they were stopping off in Berkeley and San Francisco. And there was a 3-day gap where they were headed, I think, to Bakersfield, I'm not sure. And so I emailed them and said, hey, why don't you stop in Santa Cruz? Because they were interested in doing benefits for micro radio stations or Mumia Abu Jamal groups, just interested in doing political benefits. Mm-hmm. So I contacted them, and in the midst of the craziness of our move and stuff, forgot that they were coming, and they did get back to me, and I just completely forgot, and I kind of feel really bad because I was supposed to help them play somewhere, and that never happened.
So they mentioned you, and I think they said that they have some gig in San Francisco tonight. Otherwise, they would have come on the air on my show.
Oh, bummer.
But they may be coming back. I mean, they have a very interesting history. Actually, gave me some of their literature. They got a $20,000 settlement in Woodstock, New York, about 3 or 4 months ago, when the police arrested them for naughty lyrics, and they sued them. They sued the police, or they sued
wow.
the city authority, and they effectively, you know, forced the settlement. I hope I can read about that and find that later.
$20,000.
$20,000.
That's really cool.
Similar to what a man got up in Berkeley for being arrested for chalking on the sidewalk.
What?
Oh, yeah. He was arrested for chalking on the sidewalk during the People's Park demonstrations of the early 90s, where activists trying to make sure the park remained in the hands of the community instead of going into the corporate hands of the university. And, you know, it's legal to write on the sidewalk with chalk, erasable
right.
chalk. It's not vandalism. It's
right.
And the police were arresting people for doing it because, of course, the police...
kind of do what they want.
As Sergeant, I guess it was as Officer, was it Officer Garner? I think somebody told me today, I heard this, I believe, from Steve Argue. Officer Garner was making an arrest...
this morning.
Yes.
Yeah, at about 8:30.
Really?
Or 6 o'clock this morning, yeah.
And what you want to tell us about that, Vinny?
I heard secondhand from Steve, too, but basically that he arrested or gave a ticket to a homeless man, and a paraplegic at that, and for sleeping.
At
6 o'clock this morning, and the paraplegic man said to him, why are you doing this, or something along that lines, and he says, oh, I enjoy doing this. I've been doing it all night since 11:30. Referring to the time when it does become illegal to sleep.
That actually was the story I was told by the paraplegic's friend, the homeless person's friend. But I was actually referring to another incident. I don't know, maybe I'm not thinking of Officer Garner, but I'm thinking of the famous statement by Sergeant Clark, which was repeated by another officer. I think it was Garner in a... or maybe it was Lefevre. It was some officer whose name I recognized because he'd been involved in recent controversies. He was telling a guy that he either wanted to search, he wanted to do a warrant check and arrest him on a warrant.
What?
And he held him in cuffs or something, and he said, why do you have to arrest me on this warrant? What's the point? You know, I mean, you can let me go. And he said, because I can.
Because I can.
That's what Sergeant Clark, of course, his famous response when asked why he was stealing blankets from the homeless in the spring of 1996 at City Hall.
Right.
When photographs of blankets were all that were needed to show that the people were violating the blanket ban law, his response was, because I can. So that's, again, you know, I guess that's the response of the police officers who shot down...
John Dine.
I don't know if Officer Carey said that, but I think, I mean, I
that's just the mentality of the department, I think.
It seems that there is, you know, if there is no check to police abuse, if the only check to police abuse is a kind of a fig leaf group called the Citizens Police Review Board, which has closed-door reviews of investigations conducted by the police department themselves, then you have a situation where the police are empowered to continue this kind of misbehavior.
Yeah.
And it really, you know,
almost encouraged to.
You know, if the higher ups who are responsible for controlling their police department, for weeding out the bad apples, for correcting bad policies, like Chief Belcher is supposed to do. I'm going to get a few words. If the higher ups aren't doing their jobs, and in fact they get supported and even changing the rules so they don't have to do their jobs, which is what happened like a couple years ago with Directive C-7 when Police Chief Belcher decided he didn't have to forward complaints to the Citizens Police Review Board.
Right.
He could decide which ones he would forward and which ones he wouldn't. He called the ones he wouldn't inquiries rather than full complaints.
Inquiries.
And that whole issue, by the way, is coming up at the Citizens Police Review Board on Monday. For those of you who want to go down to the board and follow it, the police department has refused I repeat, refused to release original copies of inquiries to our Citizen Police Review Board just to look at them, to see...
Just to see what people are inquiring about.
What's actually going on. They're not saying send us every inquiry. They're saying, Police Chief, you've sent us a summary of all the inquiries. That's nice. But in order for us to judge if the summary adequately reflects what the real inquiries say, we have to see the real inquiries to get some indication. Chief Belcher has said he cannot... He is forbidden by law from doing so. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm wondering whose law he's talking about. I can't believe that's true.
Particularly his law.
He created this directive. He was obliged by law to forward all those things to the police department under his own directive, under the CPRB law, and under state law. And then he unilaterally changed the law himself. His own police department policy, not the law. He can't change the law. And now he claims that he cannot do that. I mean, it's part of this endless, grueling, low-intensity warfare against any attempt, however ineffectual, to maintain any kind of oversight of the police department.
Yeah.
But I seem to be straying from the Sentinel, which has been at least part of the topic, and your own request that we play the band. I'm going to try to get the band queued up, because there's some kinds of music I like and others I don't. I'm very picky about music on my show.
Oh, I see.
But I will certainly give
it. What kind of music do they play?
Well, they sang some great songs on the street, but I have to kind of cue up to that tape. And as usual, I'm behind times because being a homeless waif myself, I'm a bit confused, bedazzled, and bedraggled. So I'll do what I can.
Why don't you get a job, you bum?
Well, that's a good point.
Just kidding.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'm going to untie your phone line right now.
Thank you.
And I hope that you get to my request.
Thank you.
And I hate the Sentinel, too.
All right.
Well, there seems to be a certain consensus on the quality of the Sentinel, or the Sentinel, as I sometimes call it. We in the studio with us is... former Sentinel wage slave, Brayton Tompkins, and Brayton's back. You actually, Brayton, wanted to get into a broader kind of perspective on how the media, mainstream media, distorts, filters, censors, and destroys the news, and actually turns it into propaganda. Frankly, I'd be happy to have you present that, but it's not... This kind of gets into the more theoretical, abstract area, which detracts from my ever-pressing interest in specific, concrete, day-to-day details. But please, it sounds like you've given this matter some thought, so why don't you talk about it?
Well, first of all, it's actually not me really who's given this thought. It's actually Noam Chomsky, who...
one of them pinkos, man.
But he does have a great analysis of exactly why we see the Sentinel doing the kinds of things it does, what sort of purpose it serves for the whole machine as a whole, but there's several different ways he lists that the media today makes sure that the public knows and thinks what it wants it to know and think. And the first way, we already touched upon earlier, was selection of topics. The reporter comes up and says, hey, there's a big protest going down at the clock tower. You know, it's Big Mountain. It's an issue that's been in the press. We need to go cover that. The editor says, no, people don't care about it. And the truth is, the editor's not saying that because he thinks people don't care about it. The fact that millions of people have been involved in this movement kind of shows that, the people do care about it. It's the fact that the editor does not want that topic to enter into mainstream thought, into what people think. Because you think about it, you read a newspaper, you're sitting on the toilet, you're in your day-to-day life, you're on your alpha waves, you're cruising through your day, and into your day comes the news. And you are taught to accept that what is on print or what is on TV is the truth, and people assume it. So I'm sure a lot of listeners know that already. So right off the bat, they start programming the masses just by saying what's going to be reported on in the first place and what's not.
I would like to find some way of opening up these lines. Any of you folks out there listening who are not our regular callers or listeners, but find what we're saying provocative or interesting or something you want to contribute to. The phone number here is 427-3772. What do you think of the Sentinel? I mean, are we giving a relatively okay paper a bad rap here? Is this some sort of private grudge match against a paper that does a fairly good job of considering it's a small town and so forth. What's the viewpoint you have out there, Radio Land? I mean, we know what these old ideologues like old Brayton here think, and these constant cranks who call in with complaints about their personal issue, the Santa Cruz Five and Campbell Street and all these things. But what about the day-to-day news? I mean, how does the Sentinel do in covering the day-to-day news? Give us a call at 427-3772. I mean, do you subscribe to the Sentinel? Have you canceled your subscription lately? Have you ever had an urge to bomb the Sentinel? No, just kidding. to pie the editor of the Sentinel. I've got to watch myself. I've got to control that mouth. I think the Sentinel is a bomb, I've got to tell you. When I look at the Sentinel, I see all these hackneyed, reprinted stories from other wire services that have nothing to do with Santa Cruz. In fact, when I compare the Sentinel a current issue of the Sentinel with one 5 years ago or 20 years ago, the Sentinel has been deteriorating steadily. I mean, it used to have three or four times the amount of local, it's hard to say coverage, but at least there were stories about local things, and it seemed to be in much greater abundance. Have you noticed anything like that, Brayton? What do you think?
Yeah, actually, looking through the morgues, just doing research for the various stories I was doing, I did notice a trend. The Sentinel used to be very locally oriented, Santa Cruz County Sentinel, and there was a meaning behind that. But of course, as movements began to sprout up, as Santa Cruz became somewhat of an oasis for alternative thinking, well, the Sentinel as a mainstream newspaper no longer had the ability to report about those things. So of course, they're turning to newswire services, and they are. If you look at the front page of the Sentinel, most of your stories there are not about Santa Cruz, and there's a lot going on in here, Santa Cruz.
You know, I think it's not just that. I think it has to do with the management. I think the Wall Street Journal
certainly
did take over the Sentinel some years ago. The company that controls the Wall Street Journal.
No, it got bought out. Really, it is Dow.
I believe that too, but I think that there's probably some complex structure.
I'm sure
that also controls Dow. That controls
one
the Wall Street
giant
Journal.
Happy little corporation.
And so instead of it being McPherson's newspaper or whatever. Where there was some professional pride, however,
there is. It still is McPherson's newspaper. He comes into the Sentinel newsroom at least once a week. Mm-hmm. He's constantly in there, and he's just as much a part of what happens at the Sentinel as anyone else.
We have someone at the door. We have someone on the phones. Hang on here.
It's Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're on the air.
Dow Jones is the parent company of the Wall Street Journal, which owns Ottawa newspapers.
And so, in other words, there is a fundamental link there.
It's not Dow Chemical, it's Dow Jones.
Well, I'm glad we have somebody with his head screwed on right here.
Oh, sorry, you're right, it was.
And if we didn't have a responsible individual listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, we'd be dismissed countywide as complete idiots. I'd like to thank you, caller, for clarifying that. Do you have any comments on the Sentinel while we have you on the line?
The Sentinel is a community newspaper that has to a substantial degree, be driven by advertising revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And in regards to whether their local coverage is adequate or not, in some cases it is, and in some cases it isn't. They make judgment calls, right? I don't know. I think the one thing that I would add to what's been said is to what degree does one expect the newspaper of record to incite? Okay, they have a right to their editorial perspective, and one would only assume that it would be leaning towards commercial growth.
Well, what about the way these?
And I don't happen to disagree with that necessarily.
Caller, let me ask you this: We know that the district attorney's office, the former district attorney and now Judge Art Danner, has come through a number of rather scandalous episodes without a lot of, good coverage on the issue in the Sentinel, or would you say the Sentinel did cover the
issue? I think they did. I would
really
also throw in there the Mid-County Post, okay?
Mid-County Post has done a good job
on that issue, particularly back in the Gardner days of the falsified time cards. The issue becomes how far within sighting, and if you talk about a hot potato issue in Santa Cruz, it's Arthur Danner III. And the repercussions therein with the track record that's very difficult to evade given the documentation.
But the Sentinel has been evading it quite well, don't you think?
I I don't want to say that. I won't say that. What I will say is that I think they find themselves in a predicament as to what they want to be labeled as inciting. I think that one can say that there has not been enough within the community itself due process that rises to the level where the Sentinel has no choice but to take it on as an issue.
Oh, I would disagree with that strongly.
All right.
I think that there's been a tremendous amount of activity going on in Santa Cruz, and I think that the Sentinel, you're right, to serve its advertisers, has refused to print a lot of this information.
That cannot
and
be
that's
held
the problem right
them.
There. I mean, was the First Amendment intended or created to support business communities, or was it intended to allow the media to be able to report as objective truth as possible to the public so that they could make better decisions in their own lives?
Well, now here
I think
it
if
is.
You look at a lot of the people who were part of the First Amendment, a lot of the radical people who were later thrown out of the Continental Congress, their vision, their idea of the First Amendment had nothing to do with business.
Well, here it is. If you want to go out and publish a paper, start it up, go out and do it, and fund it. And that is practical freedom of speech.
Well, you know, that's what A.J. Liebling, who's a very famous writer, used to say, that America certainly does have freedom of the press for anyone who owns one.
There is ultimately very little that one can say about that, I don't think, contrary in honest terms. And I think that free radio fits in with that. I certainly agree that free radio and small wattage radio stations ought to be allowed to exist and endure. But it costs money and it costs effort to keep these kinds of things going.
Don't you see a problem with that fact?
It's not a problem. The problem is when you want to take some blanket abstract ideology and put it into practice, because all you're going to end up with is ruthless authoritarianism. And I say we're better off with at least the option. If you want to go out and put up flyers, if you want to start your own weekly, you want to get on free radio, et cetera, you got the opportunity. One has to lay a lot of the dilemma on the individuals themselves that don't want to know, etc. Okay, so until we become more politicized, we ought to be grateful that it isn't worse, and in many cases I think it's fine.
Well, let's consider, frankly, I recognize the voice of this caller. This is the infamous Bob LaMonica, and Bob, you've been involved in trying to alert the community to the need for a rent stabilization board, right?
Rent control going out the gate had a lot of good support, including from the Sentinel, as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
For a very, very hot potato issue.
Now,
let me put another one in here.